This program is intended for a print-impaired audience and is brought to you by Audio Journal. Material is selected with the interests of its audiences in mind and with the goal to inform and entertain. The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Hello, and welcome to the African American Experience, a program celebrating the artistic, cultural, and historic contributions of African Americans. This program has been created and produced by Audio Journal's Roy Allen Project to carry on the work and vision of its namesake. Roy Allen was an extraordinary human being who deeply touched the lives of his family, his friends, and his colleagues. He was a trailblazer for African Americans in the fields of theater, radio, and television. In carrying on Roy's vision to inspire the African American community to a sense of pride and power in its achievements and to share those achievements with all the community, we present the African American Experience with your host, Tina E. Gaffney. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the African American Experience. This episode is about an extraordinary woman that more people definitely need to know about. I just did a documentary on her on PBS, and her name is Hazel Scott. Hazel Dorothy Scott was born June the 11th, 1920, and she passed on October the 2nd, 1981. She was an African-American jazz and classical pianist and singer. She was an outspoken critic of racial discrimination and segregation. She utilized her influence to improve the representation of African-Americans in film. She was born in the Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago. She passed in New York City. She was a pianist and a singer. And she was the first African-American woman to host her own TV show. That's crucial. The Hazel Scott Show. She was married to Adam Clayton Powell, Jr., and they had a son, Adam Clayton Powell III. Born in Port Spain, Trinidad, Scott moved to New York City with her mother at the age of 4. Scott was a child musical prodigy, receiving scholarships to study at the Juilliard School when she was 8. In her teens, she performed at Cafe Society while still at school. She also performed on the radio. She was active as a jazz singer throughout the 1930s and 1940s. In 1950, she became the first African-American to host her own TV show, The Hazel Scott Show. Her career in the United States faltered after she testified before the House Un-American Activities Committee in 1950, during the era of McCarthyism. Scott subsequently moved to Paris, France in 1957 and began performing in Europe, not returning to the United States until 1967, very similar to the journey that Josephine Baker took to pursue her career. Born in Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago, on June 11, 1920, Hazel Dorothy Scott was the only child of R. Thomas Scott, a West African scholar from Liverpool, England,
and Alma Longscott, a classically trained pianist and music teacher. In 1924, the family moved from Trinidad to the United States and settled in Harlem, New York City. Her parents had separated by this time, and Scott lived with her mother and grandmother. By now, Scott could play anything she heard on the radio. On the piano, with her mother's guidance and training, she mastered advanced piano techniques and was labeled a child prodigy. When Scott was 8 years old, she began studying with Professor Paul Wagner of the Juilliard School of Music. In 1933, her mother organized her own Alma Long Scott's all-girl jazz band, where Scott played the piano and the trumpet. By the age of 16, Hazel Scott regularly performed her radio programs for the Mutual Broadcasting System, gaining a reputation as the, quote, hot classicist, end quote. In the mid-1930s, she also performed at the Roseland Dance Hall with the Count Basie Orchestra. Her early musical theater appearances in New York included the Cotton Club Review of 1938, Sing Out the News, alongside Will Gear, who some people may remember as Grandpa Walton from the television series The Waltons, Gene Allison and Maude Simmons, and The Priorities of 1942. Throughout the 1930s and 1940s, Scott performed jazz, blues, ballads, Broadway, and boogie-woogie songs, and classical music in various nightclubs. Barney Josephson, the owner of the Black and Tan Club Cafe Society, hired her, and from 1939 to 1943, she was a leading attraction at both the downtown and uptown branches of Cafe Society. Her performances created national prestige for the practice of swinging classics. By 1945, Scott was earning $75,000 a year, which would be the equivalent of $1,309,935 today. Along with Lena Horne, Scott was one of the first African-American women to gain respectable roles in major Hollywood pictures. She refused to take roles in Hollywood portraying a singing maid, and she turned down the first four roles she was offered for this reason. When she began performing in Hollywood films, she insisted on having final cut privileges when it came to her appearance. She performed as herself in the films I Dude It, MGM, 1943, Broadway Rhythm, MGM, 1944, with Lena Horne in the otherwise all-white cast of The Heat's On, Columbia, 1943, Something to Shout About, Columbia, 1943, and Rhapsody in Blue, Warner Brothers, 1945. She appeared in five Hollywood films in all, always insisting on the credit line Miss Hazel Scott as herself, and wearing her own clothes and jewelry to protect her image. Her final break with Columbia Pictures, Harry Cohn, involved, quote, a costume which she felt stereotyped African Americans, end quote. In the 1940s, in addition to her film appearances, she was featured in Cafe Society's From Bach to Boogie Woogie concerts in 1941 and 1943 at Carnegie Hall. She was the first person of African descent to have her own television show in America, The Hazel Scott Show, which premiered on the Dumont Television Network on July the 3rd, 1950. Variety reports that, quote, Hazel Scott has a neat little show in this modest package, end quote. It's, quote, most engaging element being Scott herself, end quote. The show became so popular, it soon ran 3 times a week. On the show, Scott performed with the jazz musicians Charles Mingus and Max Roach, who were among the members of her supporting band. Scott had long been committed to civil rights. Scott refused to perform in segregated venues when she was on tour. She was once escorted from the city of Austin, Texas, by Texas Rangers because she refused to perform when she discovered that African American and white patrons were seated separately. "Why would anyone come to hear me, a Negro," she told Time magazine, "and refuse to sit beside someone just like me?" End quote. In 1949, Scott bought a suit against the owners of a Pasco, Washington restaurant, and she brought this suit because a waitress refused to serve Scott and her traveling companion, Mrs. Eunice Wolfe, because, quote, "they were Negroes," end quote. Scott's victory helped African Americans challenge racial discrimination in Spokane, as well as inspiring civil rights organizations, quote, to pressure the Washington State Legislature to enact the Public Accommodations Act in 1953, end quote. With the advent of the Red Scare in the television industry, Scott's name appeared in Red Channels, a report on communist influence in radio and television in June of 1950. In an effort to clear her name, Scott voluntarily appeared before the House Un-American Activities Committee, or the HUAC, on September the 20th, 1950, and insisted on reading a prepared statement. She denied that she was, quote, "ever knowingly connected with the Communist Party or any of its front organizations," end quote. However, she stated that she had supported Communist Party member Benjamin Davis's run for city council because Benjamin J. Davis was supported by socialists, a group that, quote, "has hated communists longer and more fiercely than any other," end quote. She also expressed her frustrations with a mass amount of false accusations of entertainers and offered the suggestion to use, quote, "democratic methods to immediately eliminate a good many irresponsible charges," end quote. Scott concluded her statement to the HUAC with the request that entertainers be not already, quote, "covered with the mud of slander and the filth of scandal," end quote, when proving their loyalty to the United States. Her television variety program, The Hazel Scott Show, was canceled a week after Scott appeared before the HUAC on September the 29th, 1950. Her program predated Nat King Cole's show by 6 years. Scott suffered a nervous breakdown in 1951. On returning to full health, Scott continued to perform in the United States and Europe, even getting sporadic bookings on television variety shows like Cavalcade of Stars and guest starring in an episode of CBS Television's Fay Emerson's Wonderful Town musical series. Scott's short-lived television show, quote, "provided a glimmer of hope for African-American viewers," end quote. During a time of continued racial bias in the broadcasting industry and economic hardships for jazz musicians in general, Scott remained publicly opposed to McCarthyism and racial segregation throughout her entire career. To evade political fallout in the United States, Scott moved to Paris in 1957. She appeared in the French Giles Granger crime film Le Désordre et la Nuit in 1958. In 1963, she marched with a number of African-American expatriates, including James Baldwin, to the U.S. Embassy in Paris to demonstrate support of the upcoming March on Washington. Scott did not return to the U.S. until 1967. By this time, the civil rights movement had led to federal legislation making racial segregation in housing and public accommodations illegal. and enforcing the protection of voting rights for all citizens, in addition to other social advances. Scott continued to perform occasionally in nightclubs, while also appearing on daytime television until the year of her passing. She made her television acting debut in 1970, performing as Dolly Martin in the NBC drama The Bold Ones, The New Doctors. The If I Can't Sing, I'll Listen episode in 1973, on the ABC daytime soap opera One Life to Live, she performed a wedding song at the nuptials of her on-screen cousin Carla Gray Hall, portrayed by Ellen Hawley. Although she was Catholic, Scott in 1945 married Baptist minister and U.S. Congressman Adam Clayton Powell. The couple had one child, Adam Clayton Powell III, but divorced in 1960 after a separation. Their relationship provoked controversy as Powell was married when their affair began. At the end of 1960, Powell married his secretary. On January the 19th, 1961, Scott married Ezio Bedin, a Swiss-Italian comedian who was 15 years her junior. They divorced a few years later, before her return to the United States. Scott had heard about the Baha'i faith from her longtime friend, Dizzy Gillespie, who joined the religion in early 1968. Following heartfelt conversations with him, she joined the faith in later 1968. While she was at Victor Moon's career reannouncement in late 1968, she was introduced by DeMone to the crowd, recalling how he was an usher for her show. This might have been the November 1942 performance by Scott and others at the Paramount Theater. DeMone shared with the crowd that she had just recently been at a Baha'i fireside, an informational meeting of the religion at his home, and had joined the religion. Scott was very moved and in tears. Scott also sang,
"Go down to the school. They're freaking illegal little Brazilian."
An October 1970 award dinner in New York, singing "When the World Was Young," "A Lonely Christmas," "Put a Little Love in Your Heart," for an International Education Year award to James L. Olivero, who remembered Louis Gregory, presented by Daniel Jordan of the Baha'is on behalf of the U.S. National Spiritual Assembly. Her singing was praised by Whitney Young, executive director of the National Urban League, who was speaking at the event. A musical was held in Kingston, Jamaica in May of 1971, entitled The Sounds of a New World, co-presented by Scott with Dizzy Gillespie, Seals and Crofts, and Linda Marshall, and others, as part of the Ship and Shore Conference of Baha'i. On October 2nd, 1981, Hazel Scott passed of cancer at Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan. She was 61 years of age. She is buried at Flushing Cemetery in Queens, New York, near other musicians including Louis Armstrong, Johnny Hodges, and Dizzy Gillespie, who passed in 1993. Scott was renowned as a virtuosic jazz pianist in addition to her successes in dramatic acting and classical music. She also used her status as one of the best-known African-American entertainers of her generation to shine a spotlight on issues of racial injustice and civil rights. Scott recorded as leader of various groups for Decca, Columbia, and Signature, among them a trio that consisted of Bill English and the double bass player Martin Rivera, and another trio with Charles Mingus on bass and Rudy Nichols on drums, from 1955 album Relaxed Piano Moods on the debut label with Mingus and Roach, is generally her work most highly regarded by critics today. Her unique swinging style and fusion of jazz and classical influences kept her in demand for performance through the very end of her life. Alicia Keys cited Scott as her inspiration for her performance at the 61st Grammy Awards, saying, quote, I've been thinking about people who inspire me. Shout out to Hazel Scott. I've always wanted to play two pianos. End quote. In 2020, she was the subject of the BBC World Service Program, Hazel Scott, Jazz Star and Barrier Breaker, in the series The Forum. In When Women Invented Television, author Jennifer Kishine Armstrong featured her as one of four women who had a major influence on the medium. In 2022, the Dance Theater of Harlem debuted a new ballet about the life of Hazel Scott. On February the 21st, 2025, the American Masters documentary, The Disappearance of Miss Scott, aired on PBS stations. Some of her discography includes Swinging the Classics, Piano Solos and Swing Style with Drums, her second album of Piano Solos with Drums, a piano recital, Great Scott, great title, Two-Toned Piano Recital, Hazel Scott's Late Show, Grand Jazz, Relaxed Piano Moods, Round Midnight, Hazel Scott, Jeu et Santé, Les Disordres et la Nuit, Vin's Dancer, Hazel Scott, Always After Hours. Some of her CD compilations include The Chronological Hazel Scott, from 1939 to 1946, The Chronological Hazel Scott, from 1946 to 1957, and Relaxed Piano Moods, Round Midnight. Other session work was the Sextet of the Rhythm Club of London, Calling All Bars, and Mighty Like the Blues, the Sextet of the Rhythm Club of London, who I didn't really tell, and he gave me the go-by. Great titles. Charlie Parker, The Complete Birth of the Bebop. Charlie Parker, The Complete Birth of the Bebop, including Embraceable You. Now, I think somebody that managed to do all of that, that's pretty incredible. But, as they say, wait, there's more. I mean, really, if you think about what was going on in those times, the very fact that she got to include all of those things is pretty exciting. Because she didn't give up, and she was extremely resilient. Now, Dwayne Mack wrote an article entitled Hazel Scott, A Career Curtailed. A Career Curtailed. On the evening of the 14th of April, 1950, the Dumont Network televised a 15-minute musical variety program featuring Hazel Scott, a beautiful, world-renowned African-American pianist, singer, and actress. Scott was married to Adam Clayton Powell Jr., the outspoken U.S. representative from Harlem, New York City, and charismatic pastor of the Abyssinian Baptist Church. At the opening of Scott's show, the camera scanned across a city skyline, then revealed the set resembling the living room of an elegant penthouse. There sat the shimmering Scott at her piano, like an empress on her throne, wrote film and television critic Donald Bogle. Presenting at every turn a vision of a woman of experience and sophistication. Scott's show was the first to feature an African-American woman host. Even for a celebrity of her caliber, Scott, like most African-Americans during the early phase of the Cold War, was no stranger to Jim Crow segregation. She, however, acted with dignity while promoting American patriotism and, in addition to patriotism, racial integration, and denouncing communism. In short, Scott was an astonishing, quote, sultry song stylist, end quote, who created, quote, her own concept of African-American pride and steadfastly adhered to it. During the era of legal segregation, African-Americans often opposed racial discrimination by using what political anthropologist James C. Scott had described as, quote, infrapolitics, end quote. In isolated incidents, they challenged white racist authority and policies through subtle forms of resistance. These interactions rarely received overt or noticeable attention, but nevertheless represented important moral or personal victories. In contrast, James Scott's other term, public transcript, the shorthand way of describing the open interaction between subordinates and those who dominate, is a better term for Hazel Scott's defiance of racism and the Cold War purges. She waged a personal crusade through the entertainment industry, the federal court system, and even a congressional subcommittee. Consequently, records reveal that racial discrimination and the communist witch hunts of the early 1950s curtailed Scott's entertainment career in the United States. I just keep thinking about how much courage it took for her to go through all of that and still come out on top. My goodness. Now, the Hazel Scott Show is something people don't talk about very much, and I wanted to make sure that since it was such a big part of her story, that it got included. The Hazel Scott Show is an early American television program broadcast on the now-defunct DuMont Television Network. The series, hosted by Hazel Scott, ran during the summer of 1950 and was one of the first American network television series to be hosted by a person of African-American descent. The Hazel Scott Show was a 15-minute long musical program hosted by pianist and singer Hazel Scott, who would perform show tunes and often numbers live on the show. Scott was no stranger to performing before she began appearing on the program. She had appeared in nightclubs, on radio and television programs, on Broadway, and in 5 feature films. The program first aired on the 3rd of July, 1950. The show was produced and distributed by the DuMont Network and aired Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 7:45 p.m. to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on most DuMont affiliates. Charles Mingus and Max Roach were among the musicians to back her in these programs. The Joan Edwards Show was in the same time slot on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Trinidad-born Hazel Scott was described as a, quote, novelty on the entertainment scene, end quote, and the series was well received by the critics. Variety wrote, quote, Hazel Scott has a neat little show in this modest package. The most engaging element is the Scott personality, which is dignified, yet relaxed, and versatile, end quote. Despite critical acclaim and decent Hooper ratings, the series was canceled after just a few months. On June the 22nd of 1950, Scott's name had appeared in Red Channels, an anti-communist publication which named support, supposedly, communist sympathizers. Although Scott appeared voluntarily before the House Un-American Activities Committee on September the 22nd and vehemently denied the charges, the Hazel Scott Show found itself without a sponsor. The DuMont Network canceled the series just 1 week later, as her being listed in Red Channels meant the series would be very unlikely to get a sponsor, and DuMont likely could not afford a sustained program in the time slot. The final network telecast was on September the 29th, 1950. The network replaced the series with The Susan Ray Show, which only lasted from October the 2nd until November the 20th. Now, a lot of people don't know what the Hooper ratings are, but here's what they were. The C.E. Hooper Company was an American company which measured radio and television ratings during the Golden Age of Radio. Founded in 1934 by Claude E. Hooper, who lived from 1898 through 1954, the company provided information on the most popular radio shows of the era. Claude E. Hooper became well known for his radio audience measurement systems, Hooper ratings or Hooper ratings. Before beginning work in radio measurement, Hooper was an author of magazine circulation. Hooper worked with the market research organization of Daniel Starch until 1934, when he left to start a research company with colleague Montgomery Clark Hooper. In the fall of 1934, the company launched syndicated radio measurement services in 16 cities. Clark left the business in 1938, and Hooper continued the firm as C.E. Hooper Incorporated. The survey method employed by Hooper was designed with the help of George Gallup, see Gallup poll, whose input Hooper later acknowledged as key. It differed from the method being used by the Advertising Industry Service, the Cooperative Analysis of Broadcasting, or CAB. In particular, Clark Hooper's method involved contacting listeners during the shows being analyzed as opposed to the following day. In the industry, the method was dubbed, quote, telephone coincidence, end quote. It superseded CAB's earlier method, telephone recall, as the industry standard. And Hooper's prevalence eventually led to the 1946 dissolution of CAB. In 1948, as the radio networks began venturing into television, Hooper began measuring TV ratings as well. In February of 1950, the company was bought by competitor A.C. Nielsen. The C.E. Hooper Company collected data using telephone surveys conducted across 36 cities during the last 13 minutes of each quarter-hour broadcast period. Respondents would be asked whether they were presently listening to the radio, and if they were, to identify the program and station they were listening to, and the program's sponsor. Using this data, biweekly ratings were compiled. Compared to the earlier Crossley ratings, Hooper ratings had the advantage of not depending on respondents remembering what they had listened to earlier in the day. However, they still only sampled an urban rather than rural population. They also failed to account for the millions of households at the time which had a radio set but no telephone. During the late 1940s, the catchphrase, "How's your Hooper?" was a well-known allusion to the size of a series audience. In 1949, the Chagrin Valley Little Theater premiered a satire of contemporary radio by Everett Rhodes Castle titled "How's your Hooper?" A George Price cartoon in the May 1949 issue of The New Yorker depicts a speeding automobile with a radio antenna being overtaken by a Hooper employee in the sidecar of a motorcycle who's shouting, "We're from the Hooper survey. Do you have your radio on? And if so, what program are you listening to?" A 1947 radio skit has Henry Morgan and Arnold Stang sarcastically discussing each other's radio shows. Morgan says, quote, "By the way, how's your Hooper rating?" end quote, to which Stang replies, quote, "Well, it's that rating doesn't mean a thing." Very interesting. I also think that about the courage that it took for Hazel Scott to do what she did and to still persevere all the way through her show, and it got to the point so much that even TV Guide was interested in it, which back then was a big thing. And some of the people that were on her show, in addition to Hazel Scott herself, were Gloria Lucas, Max Roach, Charles Mingus, and Ellen Fenwick. TV Guide as a thing was a big magazine publication, and if you got in that, you were something else. Now, it had been said that, and you'll see it or look at it or hear more about it when you see the documentary, she could play two pianos at the same time, which is no small feat. I've seen people try to do that. It is not an easy thing to do. But the very fact that she had such grace and so many abilities is just pretty incredible to be able to do this. It was billed as a late-night comedy show featuring several short skits or vignettes, parodies of television commercials, a live guest band, and a pop cultural guest host every week. Now, like I said, the disappearance of Hazel Scott lets you learn about jazz virtuoso and screen superstar Hazel Scott, the first African-American to have their own television show. In addition to that, she was an early civil rights pioneer. She faced down the Red Scare at the risk of losing her career, and was a champion for equality. There are interviews in that documentary, so I hope as many people see it as possible, with Mickey Guyton, Tracy Thomas, Amanda Seals, and Cheryl Lee Ralph as the voice of Hazel Scott. She was one of the most revered stars of the early 20th century. Not only was Scott a beloved musical sensation, but she also channeled her talents into Hollywood stardom, becoming the first African-American to host their own television show. You'll get to discover her storied life, from her childhood as a musical prodigy in Trinidad to her prolific career on stage and the silver screen, in this new documentary, American Masters, The Disappearance of Miss Scott. It's premiering again February the 21st. It's already been on PBS, though, but it features archival footage and stills, performance clips, animation, and interviews. The Disappearance of Miss Scott is the first known documentary centering on the jazz virtuoso's life, detailing her awe-inspiring talents on the piano, how she used her star power to be an influential voice of the nascent civil rights movement, and her life in Paris after being blacklisted from Hollywood during the 1950s Red Scare. Her career in the U.S. ultimately ended after she defended herself and her colleagues in front of the House Un-American Committee, and her story has been mostly silenced until this film. Excerpts of Scott's unpublished biography are voiced by Emmy Award-winning actor Cheryl Lee Ralph, revealing Scott as a woman who would not compromise on her beliefs, and are complemented by interviews with country star Mickey Guyton, actresses Amanda Seals and Tracy Thomas, jazz musicians Camille Thurman and Jason Moran, Adam Clayton Powell III, Hazel Scott's only son, and Karen Chilton, Hazel Scott's biographer. Hazel Scott was a musical wonder and was trained by her mother, who was a classically trained pianist and music teacher. 4 years later, she left the Caribbean for Harlem, New York, with her mother and grandmother, and by the age of 8, she was a pupil of Professor Walter Demrush at the Juilliard School of Music. My goodness, Scott's undeniable talent led to a vibrant jazz career, performing with the likes of Max Roach and Charles Mingus in some of New York City's most iconic venues, including Café Society, the Cotton Club, and Carnegie Hall. Subsequently, she brought her musical skills to the silver screen, starring as herself in films like Something to Shout About, I Dude It, and Rhapsody in Blue. In 1950, DuMont Television Network offered Scott her own television program. The Hazel Scott Show featured musical performances from Scott, along with musicians Charles Mingus and Max Roach, and were nationally syndicated during its run. As one of the biggest faces in entertainment at that time, Hazel Scott notably used her star power to stand up for those who were marginalized. She refused to play before segregated audiences and, as a Hollywood screen siren, she spoke out against unfair treatment. She led an actor's strike when the film director insisted on putting his African-American actors in dirty costumes and took a restaurant to court because it refused to serve her. In 1945, Scott married Adam Clayton Powell Jr., the first African-American congressman from the state of New York, and together they were a formidable pair, advocating for social progress. The Disappearance of Miss Scott is produced and directed by Nicole London, who produced the Emmy-winning and Grammy-nominated American Masters film Miles Davis' Birth of the Cool, and also worked on American Masters titles Sammy Davis Jr., I've Gotta Be Me, and Marvin Gaye, What's Going On. It was really quite an exceptional documentary. I just saw it the other day, so if you get a chance, I certainly hope you get to listen to it or hear it for wherever you get your content from. Please do it. Now, this was from the Library of Congress. Hazel Scott, now playing, it was posted by Morgan Stevens Garman on February the 2nd of 2021. An African-American jazz and classical pianist, singer, and actor, Hazel Scott was an extremely significant figure in the middle decades of the 20th century. Born in 1920 in Portage, Spain, Trinidad, she moved with her mother to Harlem, New York, when she was 4 years of age. Scott was recognized as a piano prodigy and was accepted as a student at the Juilliard School when she was only 8 years old, despite being too young to meet the school's standard stated age requirement. Scott and her mother, herself a classically trained pianist, began giving jazz performances throughout the city. During Scott's teenage years, she played piano, trumpet, and saxophone in various all-girl jazz bands, including her mother's group, Amalong Scott's All-Girl Jazz Band. Scott achieved widespread recognition at age 19 when, on Billie Holiday's recommendation, she took over Holiday's engagement at Cafe Society, the first integrated nightclub in the United States. Scott dazzled audiences with her ability to jazz up classical works, and she would record her first album, Swinging the Classics, in 1940. She made her Broadway debut in Sing Out the News in 1938 and later appeared in the musical review Priorities of 1942. In a pioneering move, Scott refused to accept any of the subservient film roles typically offered African-American women at that time. She appeared as herself in five motion pictures between 1943 and 1945. By the mid-1940s, Scott had become one of the best-known African-American entertainers in the United States, and she gained additional press attention when she was on the cover of Ebony magazine and when she married Adam Clayton Powell Jr. in 1945. Powell was the first African-American congressman from New York, and Scott and Powell each worked to further the causes of social justice and to fight racism and discrimination. In July of 1950, Hazel Scott became the first African-American to host their own television program, The Hazel Scott Show. It was an immediate success, and the DuMont Network quickly increased the national broadcast each week from 1 to 3. However, her efforts as a civil rights activist, along with the suspicion that Cafe Society was a gathering place of the Communist Party, resulted in Hazel Scott being named in the pamphlet Red Channels, the report of communist influence in radio and television. Scott voluntarily appeared before the House Un-American Activities Committee on September the 22nd, 1950. She prepared her own statement of defense, denying the allegations, and condemned the efforts of the committee as, quote, vicious slanders of little and petty men, end quote. The Hazel Scott Show was canceled 1 week later. Escaping the oppressive McCarthyism environment, Scott sought refuge in Paris. Her marriage to Powell was also falling apart, and they divorced in 1960 after a lengthy separation. With Paris as a home base, she continued to perform widely in Europe, North Africa, and the Middle East. She appeared in the French film La Dissoderie et la Nuit in 1958, hosted a salon of expatriate artists in her Paris home, and marched on the American embassy in solidarity with the 1963 March on Washington. Occasionally, Scott would return to America, and on one such trip, she recorded the acclaimed album Relaxed Piano Moods in 1955 with Charles Mingus and Max Roach. Scott moved back to the United States in 1967 and continued to give concerts. She also appeared on television in shows such as The Bold Ones, Julia, and One Life to Live. Although her fame never equaled the heights it reached in the 1940s and 1950s, her legacy as a consummate musician continues to inspire musicians and performers around the world. The Hazel Scott Papers include correspondence, photographs, clippings, programs, business papers, date books, and other materials that document her life as an entertainer and activist. Particularly interesting are a number of her handwritten lyric sheets, giving insight into the songs in her performance repertoire and the chords she chose to accompany them. Equally fascinating are notes and multiple drafts for an autobiography Scott was writing but never published. We are confident that the collection of this talented and trailblazing woman will provide opportunities for fruitful research and discovery. And some of the different ways that she's been described in our categories you can find more about her in are African American history, jazz, musicians, special collections, and women in music. Now, it's very intriguing to me that they don't really talk about the Hazel Scott Papers very often. And I would hope that at least places like, you know, music schools in Boston would talk about that, because that's a very important piece of information that musicians should know about, I think. I mean, the Library of Congress documented the life and the career of this pioneering jazz and classical pianist, singer, and actress. It contains writings, correspondence, photographs, clippings, and music reflecting her activism against segregation and challenges during the McCarthy era, including her groundbreaking career firsts and HUAC testimony. It includes correspondence, letters from 1950 through 1981, showing personal and professional connections, materials from 1947 through 1981, documenting her work and activism, photographs and other images from 1924 through 1980, capturing her life and performances, her own writings and press coverage from 1933 through 1986, sheet music and arrangements including those by Fred Norman, date books and address books, and the papers really reveal her trailblazing role as the first African-American entertainer with a TV show and her unique blend of classical and jazz music, her refusal to play for segregated audiences leading to conflicts and blacklisting during the Red Scare, her voluntary appearance before the House Un-American Activities Committee to clear her name, which significantly damaged her career. Insight into her famous friends like Lena Horne and relationship with Congressman Adam Clayton Powell Jr. The extensive collection is held by the Music Division of the Library of Congress, with finding aids available online. Which is pretty great that all of that was saved. Now, in Jet Magazine, January 25th, 2021, they have a bit called Whereas Stories from the People's House, starring Hazel Scott as herself. A 1960 issue of Jet Magazine features Hazel Scott and Adam Clayton Powell Jr. The photography may show, and other photographs may show, the couple playing with the cat, but the article delves into their troubles. The cover of Jet shows a seemingly happy couple. Hazel Scott, talented jazz pianist, smiles and leans into her congressman husband, Adam Clayton Powell Jr. But the headline, The Trials of Hazel Scott and Her Adam Powell, tells a different tale. Civil rights. Congress and Scott's performances coincided in the late 1940s and early 1950s. Quote, I've been brash all my life, and it's gotten me into a lot of trouble, end quote, Scott said. Quote, but at the same time, speaking out has sustained me and given meaning to my life, end quote. She paired her music with a commitment to racial equality. At first, she found some congressional support for the trials she faced. However, after being falsely accused of communist leanings and testifying before the House Committee on Un-American Activities, the HUAC, Hazel Scott's career never recovered. Being a child prodigy on the piano, Scott moved from Trinidad to New York at the age of 4. Auditioning for Juilliard at 8, she stunned professors with her rendition of Rachmaninoff's Prelude in C sharp minor. Although she was too young to attend the college-level academy, she took private lessons at Juilliard, one of the few African-American students. In her late teens, Scott began performing classical pieces, then started improvising, syncopating music, and incorporating jazz riffs. Jazz in the classics, in public performances, required mastery of both classical music and jazz. Scott's unique talent, looks, and stage presence propelled her to success and enabled her to demand equal treatment as an artist. The pianist built civil rights into her work. She refused to play for segregated audiences. Her contract stipulated that if she arrived at a venue and found that African Americans and whites were seated in separate sections, she would leave without playing. She would completely leave without playing anything and still get compensated. Similarly, when Scott started to appear in films, she refused to take the stereotypical roles offered to African-American actresses at the time. Instead, she appeared in several films as herself, playing piano and sporting her own dresses and jewels. But the film industry banded together to silence her after she protested the way a Hollywood studio planned to dress other African-American actresses. Scott was blacklisted from films. In the 1940s, Scott began a relationship with Adam Clayton Powell Jr., the well-known pastor of the Abyssinian Baptist Church, and also a candidate for the House seat representing Harlem. Powell was married at the time, and their liaison caused a scandal, although it did not bring down Powell's candidacy. They married in 1945, after Powell took his seat as a representative in the 79th Congress. According to broadcaster Murray Horowitz, they were, quote, one of America's leading glamour couples, and certainly the power couple among African Americans in the 1940s and 50s, end quote. Now, Scott's performances and her desire for equal treatment came under a congressional lens as she began a tour in 1945. At Powell's suggestion, Scott's first scheduled venue was Constitution Hall in Washington, D.C. Founded by the Daughters of the American Revolution, or DAR, Constitution Hall had a policy of white performers only. DAR was both tax-exempt and operated under a charter from Congress. Famously, 6 years earlier, the Daughters of the American Republic prevented the acclaimed opera singer Marian Anderson from performing at Constitution Hall, and she instead performed outdoors at the Lincoln Memorial. So it came as no surprise when Constitution Hall canceled Hazel Scott's performance, reportedly after calling to ask what race she was. Quote, "As a member of Congress, I recoiled at the idea that a congressman's wife, an American citizen, and a gifted artist would not be allowed to perform in a hall largely supported by tax-deductible contributions," end quote. Powell later wrote, he urged President Harry Truman and other members of Congress to support Scott. Fellow New York Representative Emanuel Suller agreed, quote, "It is such obvious examples of intolerance and discrimination, as indicated by the barring of Miss Scott from Constitution Hall in the nation's capital, that we must combat with all our available skills and energies." Connecticut Representative Clara Booth Luce, a DAR member, also spoke out against the discrimination. Several members, confronted by the taxpayer-funded racism, introduced legislation aimed at pressuring DAR to end its white performers-only rule. However, outrage did not translate into meaningful action. President Truman conveyed his regret at the situation but would not interfere. The bills that members introduced to pressure DAR did not get very far, and, in a foreshadowing of Scott's future dealings with Congress, Mississippi Representative John Rankin insinuated that the attacks on the DAR came from communists. Scott did not perform at Constitution Hall. A photograph from 1946 shows Scott and Powell cradling their two-week-old son around the time of their first anniversary. "Music or politics?" the photo caption asked. For a moment, both music and politics took a break from family. In July of 1950, the Hazel Scott Show appeared on television, making Scott the first African-American host of a nationally syndicated show. But just as the program was getting off the ground, Scott learned that she had been included in the anti-communist pamphlet Red Channels, which published names of those in the TV and radio industry suspected of communist activity. So it's like I said, you have to stick to it, persevere, and explore, connect, create, and inspire.
You have been listening to The African American Experience, a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. This program is brought to you in part by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind and the Massachusetts Commission for the Blind. If you would like a hard copy of our program schedule, either in large print or braille, please call 508-797-1117. Archived editions of this program are available on our website, audiojournal.org, or go to the Audio Journal app on your iPhone or iPad. I'm Tina E. Gaffney. Thank you for listening.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.
The Attorney General's Office is an advocate and resource for all residents of Massachusetts. The Attorney General's Office protects consumers, combats fraud and corruption, and investigates crime and prosecutes criminals. Additionally, It protects the environment, workers, and civil rights. For more information, or if you need to file a complaint, call 617-727-2200.